Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today as we begin our program by taking a look at bicycles with Amy Walker. She is the editor of On Bicycles, 50 Ways the New Bike Culture Can Change Your Life. She co-founded Momentum Magazine, which focuses on transportation cycling, covers all aspects of urban bike culture throughout North America. And she joins us by phone from Vancouver, British Columbia. Amy Walker, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I'm just arriving at the destination over here, the quiet spot.
Ah, so you're on your are you on your bike?
Yes, I am. I'm headed out to we have a thing called the Canada Line. And it's transit that you can take your bike on. And I know you guys do that in Wisconsin as well.
Yep, absolutely. Well, I tell you, I really enjoyed reading your book on bicycles.
What stood out for you? What was your favorite part?
I don't know. I think I like the part about sharing biking through culture. I thought that was a fun part of the book for me to read. I liked learning about the gears, the new gear system, and here in Wisconsin, and especially in Madison, the city of Madison, Wisconsin, we are quite attuned to biking and biking for regular transportation as well as recreation, and I think our city and many places in our state are set up for it.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that I think cities that do transportation or do bicycling well also do the sort of intermodal transportation well. So Vancouver, BC is starting, where I live, is starting to do a really good job. But we don't have a bike share yet, which I hear you have.
Yes, we do.
I'm a little envious of that. Because, it's taking us a while to get the bike share going, and that's because we have a helmet law. So that's a little... There's always little, little obstacles in the way of getting these advancements. But I feel like it's really high time, you know? I feel like when I look at the work that the bike advocates have been doing for the last, you know, really, really heavily for 20 years, and then we're starting to see these changes happen. I just feel like finally.
things
are changing.
We're fortunate in that we have some great bike companies, especially Trek. Trek Bikes, formed here and started here in Wisconsin, and it's a wonderful... I have 3 Trek bikes myself, as a matter of fact.
Well, and Trek's done a lot for advocacy.
Well, that's the thing. And they're one of the reasons I think we probably have this sharing program that we have. You know, modern biking... By the way, let me give the number. If anybody wants to join in, if you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join us. Maybe you bike as a means of transportation. If you don't, why not? Where do you ride to, work or school? Do you drop the kids off at daycare? We dropped Emily off at daycare on the bike for a few years. Call in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a photograph right there. Modern bikes, they've been around for... over a century, and in North America, have they historically been used more for recreation or as a regular source of transportation? I suspect more as for recreation as we...
Yeah, well, in North America, I read a statistic a couple of years ago that about 80 to 90% of the industry, the income in the bike industry was from recreational cycling. So the transportation part of it has been small in terms of the income generation, sort of the money that's made. And I think that's actually caused a bit of a bit of a problem for the industry adopting, you know, more of a transportation cycling outlook and sort of catering to that market, if you will, because I think their traditional markets have been, especially, you know, the big mountain biking boom and then 90s lots of road cycling. So just to culturally kind of get in tune with the transportation market has been a bit of a jump for the bike industry. But I think they're really coming around now.
And you talk about the new bike culture. How do you describe the new bike culture exactly?
Well, that's just it. The new bike culture is the transportation bike culture. It's the culture of people who are basically just getting on their bikes to get to work, to get to school, to carry their groceries home. In a way, it's just so simple. And I think the cultural aspect of it is when people start connecting with one another and start sharing their experiences.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big part of why we started Momentum. It was a way to reflect the realities of all these people who often, you know, they're doing the same types of activities, but they're sort of separate, isolated from one another.
Yeah.
So it's a way of connecting us so that we can, you know, kind of share experiences, learn, and grow.
Maddie in Waupaca has a comment or a question. Let's go to her. Hi, Maddie. Thank you for calling.
I'd like to encourage elderly people to take up biking. I took it up in 2001 when my husband and I moved to the Waupaca area, and that's part of the reason why we moved there is the biking is so great in the Waupaca area. And I just turned 70, and last year I biked over 700 miles. I didn't quite make that high mark this year. I biked around 500 miles because I wasn't home as much as I was the previous year. But I just love it.
And you know, I want to have Amy comment on that. Thank you very much for calling, Maddie. Comments, Amy?
I'm impressed definitely with Maddie at being a cyclist at her age. And I'm not surprised though. I'm just, my mom cycles a lot and she's in her 60s. And I had a friend recently who was doing a ride and he realized that all the fast times were coming. He went on a sort of like a recreational ride. The fast times were a lot of the older riders. And it got me to thinking that, as we age, cycling is one of the activities that we can really, you know, continue doing into our older years, our elder years, and we can also really improve as we age. So I was really, I was really happy to just meditate on that one.
Yeah, thanks very much again for calling, Maddie. And frankly, it's, as opposed to running or jogging, it's a lot easier on the joints. Biking is, you know, for a recreational exercise when you're older, I think it can work really very, very well. Well, what is it about how North American cities have been developed that discourages people from using bikes as a primary form of transportation? It seems like the whole idea of suburbs, for example, is not very conducive to biking to work, to school, or do errands.
Yeah, and part of that is just that there's sort of an indirectness about them. The land use planning is not the greatest. No. There's a way, I'm sure, though, to redesign the suburbs, to sort of create pathways that create direct routes through the suburbs. So I believe in the future, and I mean, we're already seeing a bit of that, but I think we'll see more of that just because people will need to use their bikes more and even walking, you know. Even redeveloping to create, I think a lot of the suburbs are, there's sort of bedroom communities and there's little office communities. And what people really need is places where they can live and work in a closer proximity.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see a lot more of the redesign of our landscape. It's a challenge because in North America, everything's been designed around the car, as you know.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at Europe and Asia even, biking's often the preferred way to get around. And how do these cultures make biking easier and a good option?
Part of it is that they've been, the cities, many of the cities in Europe were designed before cars existed. So their streets and their layouts are more compact and smaller to begin with. So
cars can't get around as well.
That's right. They never were able to get around as well. So the bones are there, the structure's there to begin with to make it easier. And secondly, a lot of cities in Europe, including Amsterdam and Copenhagen, have been really on this and planning for more cycling and walking and reducing car traffic for 30 and 40 years. So what they have done is taken, you know, a small percentage away of road space away from cars every year. And because it's been so fractional, people really haven't noticed it. So a lot of the changes we're seeing in North America are a bit more sweeping and a bit more fast, and that feels shocking for people. And my heart actually goes out to people who are accustomed to driving and who are used to, you know, the status quo, because, you know, obviously when your world starts changing, you kind of get upset.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of the way it's going.
Arnett in Dodgeville, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Arnett. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and Amy. This is partly comment, partly brag. My son, Sean, graduated from UW-Milwaukee with an engineering degree and moved out to Portland, Oregon, which I'm sure Amy knows is the huge biking culture. And they have a contest called the Oregon Manifest. I'm sure Amy's familiar with that. It's a design competition where they come up, I think it's possibly even international, where they try to come up with the design to make the bike more commuter friendly. You know, designing where they can, you know, make it where people can use it more than just for transportation. And his team won the competition this year. His company is called Ruckus Components, and they just make parts, right, racing bike parts and repairs out of carbon fiber. And, you know, that's part of the new biking culture, mm-hmm. too, is to make them light and stronger, too. So, anyway, I just wanted to put that in there, and I'm sure Amy's familiar with Portland, too, as being very much a biking city.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Arnett. And comment, Amy?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Oregon Manifest is an incredible event, and I was fortunate enough to attend this year. And Portland, oh my God, I love visiting Portland, not just because of the biking, but what a great city. And as far as, you know, the hand-built bike, you know, just an incredible explosion of craft. And a lot of this is also, you know, building things locally, which is another, you know, hot topic, another thing that's something I care about a lot. So when people are starting to design and build these utility bikes, when you look at the Oregon Manifest website, you'll be able to see all these beautiful bikes that were designed, and they were actually raced on a course. They're not raced, but ridden on a course to sort of test out, you know, their functionality. You will just be amazed at the ingenuity and the beauty that's going on in North America.
Yeah. Well, here's a different view for you. We have a listener who from Merrimack who says that bikes are dangerous for the rider and a nuisance for drivers. How do you respond to those ideas?
I don't think that even requires a response. I think it sounds like some sort of something you'd read on the internet by someone who's just a troll. I'm not sure. That sounds like a knee jerk to me. What?
Well, are they dangerous for the rider? Are they?
No, bicycles aren't dangerous for the rider. I mean, I think walking is actually more dangerous if you walk in a city. So, you know, I would suggest that listener do a little research, because they're reacting on probably an emotional level.
And the business about being a nuisance for drivers, I think one of the problems there is just how we've engineered things. How we've engineered roads inside and so forth.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about the dangers in our world, a lot of the dangers that we face in cities are from, you know, getting hit by cars. And if we took all the cars out of our streets, or even if we had a car-free street per day, which some cities do have, the danger level goes way down. And then the stress level goes down, and people are able to, you know, do all kinds of activities and talk to each other and meet each other in a way that they wouldn't. So I really feel like we are almost blind to the fact that cars have this domination over our urban spaces. And I try not to be anti-car, because I think that doesn't win any hearts and minds. But I do feel like once people start to see that, and once they start to realize that, it's pretty significant in terms of how cars influence our lives.
Amy Walker is the editor of On Bicycles, 50 Ways the New Bike Culture Can Change Your Life. Questions or comments for her, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page, post a photo or a question there at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Amy Walker, editor of the book On Bicycles, 50 Ways the New Bike Culture Can Change Your Life. And lots of callers online and lots of emails, too. So let's go to the phones next. Glenn and Spooner, we go to you. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for this show. This is near and dear to my heart. Since I called in earlier, you've said a bunch of things that have really got me cooking now. I always tell friends a bike is a great thing. It runs on peanuts, Dairy Queen's sandwiches, whatever you want to put into the peddler. But anyway, I've been biking since the 1940s when I was a kid, and I had a Schwinn bike, and I took it apart and put it back together dozens of times, and I knew every bearing and every piece. And then I went into the three-speed, you know, and then I had to have a 10-speed, and I had a bike with my nose to the pavement. And that got uncomfortable as I got older. And then I thought mountain bikes were the way to go. Well, they're not ergonomically comfortable either. But recently, about 3-4 years ago, my wife and I, I'm 72, she's 71, we got a couple of bicycles that are like the old Schwinns with the sweep back handlebars and comfortable seats. But the difference is they're much, much lighter.
Mm-hmm.
Biking for people our age is just a joy again.
There are some, and thank you very much for calling. Glenn, I appreciate your call very much. And Amy, the technology really has made it a much more enjoyable experience, biking.
Yeah, and I think what you're seeing these days is a lot more bikes that are good for commuting, and especially kind of commuting longer distances. But the type of bike you have really does affect your ride. And I would say, you know, you can really ride anything. I rode a big, heavy cruiser to work for 11 years before I realized I should get a lighter bike. And, you know, that bike got me there. And, I was still perfectly happy to ride. And I think I'm a little happier now. But I would say it's really worth it for people to look at and educate themselves a little bit about the type of bike that's going to fit their life the best. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, to look at what their investment might be in that bike, so that a lot of the time I do hear people who are looking for a bike and they only want to spend a couple $100. And I think, well, you know, you're going to get a lot of value out of this bicycle. So consider it like your transportation and how much money you would spend over a year on the bus or over a year on your car, and then start to factor that in. And treat yourself a little better when you get that bicycle and get something light and fast and strong.
Thanks again for calling, Glenn. Appreciate your call. Email from Liz. I'm a bike lover who has been having to drive a lot lately due to various reasons, wondering how I can be more helpful when I'm driving to help nurture the bike culture in the city.
That's a wonderful question. I think just keeping your eyes out and even making eye contact with cyclists, and it's hard to be very communicative when you're in a car because you've got all that car around you, but I think just being conscious of your surroundings and one thing that I do notice with car drivers, sometimes they don't realize that bikers are also required to follow the same rules that they are on the road. So sometimes car drivers will sort of stop and wait for cyclists when actually the car driver has the right of way. And I would just say that treating cyclists not just like a car, but sort of, you know, using stop signs the same way as a car would, that tends to work out well, instead of always giving right of way to the cyclists.
We have some more emails. By the way, listener Seth reminded us that when the New York Times Frugal Traveler recently visited Madison, he highlighted our great bike-friendly infrastructure. In fact, he used a bike the whole time he was here, as a matter of fact, to get around. And I don't know if you saw that article or not, Amy.
No.
In the New York Times. Yeah, he had a really nice piece, and really appreciated the fact that it is so easy to get around by bicycle here
in Madison.
Yeah, it's just bike paths everywhere.
That's what I've heard. I have not been there, but I've had a number of people I know who are from Madison.
You have to come.
No.
You have to come and visit for sure. Tell us, I should have started with this, but maybe you can tell us how your book is organized for our listeners, what they're going to find when they open the pages.
Well, there's four sections pretty well. So the first section, it just talks about all the right reasons. So basically all the reasons that we ride, you know, things like the environmental benefit and the fun factor and the physical, you know, health benefits, all that sort of stuff. The next section is about all kinds of different gear that you can use, and including cargo bikes, which are, you know, a real amazing part of the new bike culture, which we can talk about more if you like. In that gear section also includes folding bikes and internally geared hubs, as well as a chapter about the North American city bike. What would the ideal North American city bike look like? So there's lots of gear-centric stuff in there. And then we've got a chapter that is all about the culture side. So the people stuff, the softer, as a friend of mine would say, the software that goes along with the hardware. And then the last chapter is called, or the last section is called Getting Serious. And that includes all kinds of programming and policy oriented articles that are, you know, about things like bike shares and why separated bike lanes make sense and the importance of having parking for our cycles and that sort of thing. There's lots in there.
Lots in there for sure. There's a whole lot to chew on. I tell you, and written in a, you did a nice job of editing it, keeping the writing fairly consistent in terms of the style.
I had a lot of help from a wonderful editor, as well, who worked with me, a copy editor, who it's always a collaboration when you do these things. And one of the things that I was hoping for was that the author's voices would stay sort of true to themselves, because I like variety. I like to hear, you know, mm-hmm. the different voices. And then my copy editor helped me be consistent.
And it shows, boy, bicycling has really changed probably your life, altered it in many positive ways.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I wouldn't be quite the same person if I didn't ride a bike. And it's hard to imagine what life would be like, actually, because, you know, it's grown into such a big part of my life.
Elena in Madison wanted to, loves the hearing from you and just wanted to stress the importance of bike safety, especially the importance of wearing helmets. I work at the Children's Hospital in Madison. It's always hard when a kid comes in from the ER suffering from a head injury because he wasn't wearing a helmet. Simple thing that can save people's lives. In fact, the Kohl's Safety Center in American Family Children's Hospital sells bike helmets for toddlers up to adults for only $10. It's an affordable way to keep people safe. That's the insurance, the hospital that the insurance agency funded. They sell bike good helmets for $10.
Yeah, good point. So is an important part of that puzzle is the access to helmets and gear and that sort of stuff. We have this this annual celebration of Bike Month is what I call it, when the police come out in Vancouver and start ticketing people for no helmet. We have a helmet law here. And I always feel for people who want to get on their bike, but maybe they don't have a helmet. I've heard that sometimes not having a helmet is an impediment to people actually riding their bikes. So any programs that make it a little cheaper, a little easier to get helmets on heads is a good thing.
We've got Heidi in Watertown next with a question. Hi, Heidi.
Hi. So my comments basically go back to the cultural differences between the United States and other parts of the world. I've been really lucky with my job to be able to travel mostly in Europe and Asia and to see the cultures firsthand, be able to ride my bikes in some of those cities. And I just think even if we change our infrastructure, which I don't think it would be huge changes we would need to make to accommodate biking, but the bigger problem that we have is people's attitudes and perceptions towards bikers and just getting on bikes themselves. In London, I think it was a year or two ago, they've enacted a program where they subsidize, they give you a certain, I think it's like 1,500 pounds or something towards a bike and riding, you know, like visible outfits for riding. But you get that money back, and they're basically giving you everything that you need to do. So you have no excuse not to ride. And I think that, you know, Americans think that we have the right to drive these SUVs and do whatever we want, and bikers shouldn't be on the road. And I think if we made it easier for people and made it more mainstream, the safety issues would be greatly reduced. And I just think people will be more motivated to get on bikes, because it can be an expensive thing to get into initially, but the benefits for your health and even just the money you save on your car bills and gas far outweigh the initial cost of getting on a bike.
Mm-hmm.
And the second comment I had was, you know, think about who you're electing to office too, because they have a big impact on the money that's spent for infrastructure and programs. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was this last mayor that we elected overturned budget that had been set aside for the bike sharing program, and Trek was nice enough to basically sell the whole program to the city of Madison for $1.
Yeah.
So they ate the cost on that, which is incredible, and we're lucky to have a company nearby that is such a huge advocate for cycling.
Absolutely. Thank you, Heidi, for calling. Comments, Amy?
Yeah, I think Heidi made a lot of great points there. And the one that really stands out for me is this whole perception issue, because I think that is really huge when it comes to our understanding of our world and how things go. And so I feel like where we can change that is through education and through encouragement. And I think the evidence is there that encouraging cycling is both it's a help for both our health and our pocketbooks. Cycling is very efficient. So I'm not going to make the evidence case, but I'm going to say that I think that the way that we can get more bums on bikes is really through this cultural change and through programs both in schools and workplaces, looking at all the facilities that we have, and really giving people connections to other cyclists and supporting, you know, the advocacy groups. I think we really have to look at hugely increasing the social aspect of encouraging cycling, because the engineering side, the infrastructure, is just one part of it. So, Heidi, that perception issue is you're bang on there.
Yeah. Thanks,
yeah.
Heidi.
Yep, thanks. Bye.
Tad in Ontario, Wisconsin. Your turn. Hi, Tad.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Amy. Amy, I agree with everything you're saying. I couldn't support you more, but I would not be doing myself justice if I didn't speak up. I come from the bicycle fitting background, and I have years of experience fitting people to bicycle. And it's amazing how many people I see, commuters, recreational cyclists, that don't fit their bikes. And I think a lot of people don't ride because their bikes hurt, their seats hurt, their whatever hurts, because they've never been instructed on the proper fit of a bicycle. And I hope that you address that in your book, that people should go to their local bike shops and just get an easy preliminary fitting for a bicycle. It's not something that's just only for the racers or the, you know, really uber serious bikers, but everybody should be fit to get better ergonomics on their bikes, and they'll be much happier in their riding if they do.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I can't say that we've emphasized it as much in the book as you have here, but I totally agree, and usually a fitting can be found at a local bike shop fairly easily. What does it cost where you are to get a fitting?
Well, it can vary from, you know, a full professional fitting for a couple $100 to, there are shops, there's a program out there that some bike shops have, is called body scanning. It's a very quick easy fit, and I know many bike shops don't even charge for that because it's so fast, it's so easy, yet it's very accurate. And a good bike shop employee, somebody that's been working for years in a bike shop, is usually pretty good at eyeballing somebody on a bike. And if you get something mechanical like body scanning or a fit kit, or even up to the where they're videotaping you on a bike, I mean, that's just taking it to the very next level, and it's extremely accurate at that. So it's everything from free to a couple hundred dollars for a bicycle fitting.
Yeah. Here we've got a shop that, you know, they charge $60, you know, so I think that's a reasonable amount to invest when you consider, you know, daily your contact points and your leg extension and that everything, you know, you want to be comfortable. But I absolutely agree. And I wasn't as aware of that, 5 years ago even. And it's become a lot more apparent to me in the last couple of years how important it really is. So you're right on, Larry.
And thanks again for calling, Tad. Appreciate it very much. Aaron emailed us and says, well, we'd love to bike year-round, but we live in northern Wisconsin. Are there bikes with built-in heaters? What about snow tires?
Well, there are bikes with electric motors. Perhaps you could rig something up with that.
Oh, man.
You know what happens when you're on your bike in the winter? You are your own built-in heater. You start generating heat. And when you've got some nice woolly layers on, you feel pretty toasty warm by the time you get to your destination, not to mention that you've had a little workout and you feel, you know, sort of energized and awake. And so the comfort issue is one I can really understand, but there's a few other benefits going on there too.
Well, we had there's a great photo of a stencil on my Facebook page now. Kyle sent, this is a stencil on a street comparing bikes and cars on Facebook, and the caption under the bike says, "This one runs on fat and saves you money." And the caption under the car is, "This one runs on money and makes you fat."
I've seen that.
I hadn't seen that one.
That's an old chestnut, that one.
it's true.
It's just true. What more can you say?
Well, Stephen Brown Deer has a question or comment. Let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Larry. I lived in Portland, Oregon for about 10 years, and we had a gentleman that bought the house across the street from us, and he was going to move his belongings with his bike, and I thought he'd come along with a bag or two. One morning, I looked out my window, and there was a whole caravan of bikes with trailers. They moved dressers, his bed, chairs, you name it. They had it on the back of their bicycle. They moved his whole household just by pedal power. It was amazing.
Wow.
So a bicycle, you know, sometimes you think it's just something to get from point A to B and a little exercise, but there's people who use them for everything, including moving stuff.
Great story, Steve. Thanks for calling. Amy, a comment?
Well, that gets you back to this whole subject of the cargo bicycle, because a lot of the time, people need to carry something with them when they're going somewhere. So we've seen in North America the last couple of years just a real resurgence. It's not a resurgence, but maybe it is. Maybe we used to have more cargo bikes here in the olden days. But starting with, I would say, the folks at Extra Cycle, I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's like an extension kit.
Yep.
You can extend your regular bike and make it a bit longer and add some cargo space. There's been a whole movement of cargo cycling growing in North America. And so now Trek offers a cargo bike. There's one called the Yuba Mundo. There's another one that Kona bikes up they're local to me here. They have it's called the Ute. And then we have a whole bunch of, especially in Portland, people building these like a long john or flatbed or box seat, box bike style cargo bikes. And that's a way that you can move all your stuff by bike. And the bike moves stands out. I mean, it's a real Portland tradition. And I've done one here in Vancouver as well, where people, it's like a barn raising. We talked about this at another show recently. It's like a barn raising on bikes where everyone's getting together and helping out. And it's like a parade. It ends up being really fun as well as getting the job done.
We have, and going from the largest to more something more compact, we have Chris and Menasha, I think, with a comment on folding bikes. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, hi, good morning. Glad to hear you guys talking about bicycles. Actually, that fellow from Portland, I was in Portland riding just the other day. I fly through a large cargo airline, and as a pilot, I find myself with a lot of time to kill in various parts of the planet, and I have, for the last several years, been carrying a Dayhan Boardwalk folding bicycle, which is my primary source of exercise and entertainment while I'm on the road. It's been to Europe. It's been all over in North and South America. Everywhere I go, I have my transportation and a pleasant way to pass the time.
Oh, very cool. Amy, isn't that cool?
Yeah, well, I love Dayhan folding bikes. I have ridden a couple of them, and they're wonderful. And I'm just folding bikes in general are another great way that you can bike when, say, you don't have a lot of space in your house to store a bike, or perhaps you have to take a train partway to work, so you want to fold your bike up and take it on the train. Or even, you know, if you need to stick it in the trunk of your car sometimes and ride part of the way. Folding bikes are another just booming aspect of the cycling industry. Really exciting.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Yeah, we had an email from Patrick who said one of the greatest biking advocates is your small bike shop person who teaches young riders, teaches others how to ride properly, and funds programs that help support cycling. If you want to support cycling, support your local shop.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's surprising to learn that a lot of the bike sales in North America are through, you know, what you call like a big box store. A lot of bikes mm-hmm. are sold through those types of stores. And similar to, you know, like the big box anything, the people in those big boxes are not experts at bicycles. They sell all kinds of different things. But when you go to your local bike shop, these people are experts, and they love bicycles. They're not in it to get rich, usually. They're in it because they love it. And so, absolutely, I would encourage people to just go and buy some little bell and start up a conversation with your local bike shop. And, you know, they're often very busy in there. We have a chapter in the book called How to Help a Bike Shop Help You. And it's about, you know, sometimes they have a million different things going on in their day. And so when you walk into that bike shop, it's good to be a little bit prepared to know what you're up to. Myself, I've often been kind of afraid to go into bike shops because I feel like I don't relate to the stuff, all the gear. I relate more to the people. So when I walk into a bike shop, I just see all these bits and pieces and whatever. And so for me, it took working in a bike shop to actually get over that. And I would say it's really, really worth it because the people who are working in bike shops are amazing.
Yeah.
And they often have really good advice and information for you, as well as, you know, some spanking new gear.
Amy, it's a great pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Larry, my pleasure. Thank you.
Bike on. Thank you very much for being with us. Amy Walker, editor of On Bicycle, 50 Ways the New Bike Culture Can Change Your Life. She co-founded Momentum Magazine, which focuses on transportation cycling. And you can, I'm sure, find that if you go online as well. And we'll have something posted on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Well, one activity you might want to bike to is birds, to see bird watching. And fall's a great time to see migratory raptors. And Jerry Liguori has a new guide out to help us identify those incredible birds. Stay tuned for some talk with him about the raptors around us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.